This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live. HRRN
Live. But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
The show that trainers listen to. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good afternoon once again, everybody, and welcome to Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by our friends at Fasig Tipton, and we are doing this show live from Saratoga Racecourse in upstate New York, and always a great racing venue, 150 years of racing taking place here this season. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and our special guest tonight on Trainer Talk is Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito. Really, really looking forward to this visit.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to this for a long, long time. It's great to have Nicky here, and especially at this venue, a place where he's been very successful in New York. He is the New York man.
65-year-old Nick Zito, the native of Queens, New York. He has trained 1,925 career winners, actually a tad more than that now. His runners have earned nearly $105 million in purses. And among those 1,900-plus wins are two Kentucky Derbies, a Preakness, two Belmont Stakes, and a pair of Breeders' Cup wins. And he'll be looking to add to that moving on here through the future. He was inducted into Racing's Hall of Fame in 2005, and he is nice enough to spend some time with us here tonight. Nick, thanks so much. I really appreciate you taking the time.
No, I appreciate this opportunity. I've been looking for it for a while, too. I listened to your show. It's very interesting and very enlightening. And obviously, you guys have a lot of compassion, and you love what you're doing. You know what you're doing. I never realized this gentleman here was a horse trader for all those years. Found out the hard way. You know, he was an imposter for all these years. But I have so much respect for horse trainers, and I really do. You know, and to be a horse trainer, and you know, to come into this situation, and to bring light to people what it means, and know something about how the back stretch works and how hard trainers work, and you know, grooms and hot walkers and excise riders and people and owners and situations, it's good to have somebody like that. And of course you, Mike, through our great friend Pete Coolis, you learn from the best. And you know, coming from Kentucky and doing the show there, and so I'm a racing fan first. It's really crazy. You know, you get up in the morning and you say, what do you want to do with life? Like, let's say you hit the lottery. What would you do? What would I do? Probably go get a nice set of clothes and bet on the races. That's what I do. You know, like, so no matter how you look at it, you know, I'm a racing fan first. And that's why I've been fortunate, because you know, I walk through the grandstand a lot, especially Saratoga. I come from my barn, and everybody I run into, you know, different people, and I actually enjoy that. It's like actually a calming effect before I go into the paddock. So you know, I didn't realize this all these years, but you talk to so many people, and they're all racing fans, obviously. They all like racing, and they come from different walks of life. You know, this somebody's even a race car driver I met a bunch of times, and you know, sure, different, you know, celebrities we meet, and just regular people that just want to take their families to the races. So for me, this is it. This is the only thing I know. And one time, Lenny Goodman, the famous jockey agent, and his friend Joe Travato, I was telling him, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be this. He said, look, dumb me up, you couldn't be, you know what. Shut up and just stay on the racetrack, you know.
Well, I think you're the face of New York racing. You have been for a long, long time. You're somebody that everybody in New York knows and recognizes. And, of course, it probably takes you an extra 20 minutes to get to the paddock because everybody wants to say hello and talk to you about the horses and all that. But there's that continuing theme through New York trainers that they are fans, and I think that's, you know, it's like a lot of trainers in California as well. You don't get to see horses any place but the track. So when you come to the races when you're a kid and you see the horses, you fall in love with that. Whereas, you know, people from Kentucky, they're around them every day. You drive down the street, you see a horse. You don't do that in New York, obviously.
That's
so
right.
It's what I think makes a lot of New York trainers so good, is that they really appreciate being with the animals.
Oh, no question. You know, my father was a lover of horses, and I'll tell you something. I'll go way back. You know, your dads will tell you, they used to have a lot of Westerns on television. So he used to watch all the Westerns.
Yeah.
You know, we were kids, and we knew all those, you know, Gunsmokes and Mavericks and Sugarfoots and
John Wayne.
Yeah, every one of them. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So we would look at that, and I always wanted to be around horses, you know. And one day, not living far from Aqueduct, growing up there, it's funny, you know, I was born in Brooklyn, raised in Queens. So it's so funny. I moved to Queens when we were 6 years old, and Brooklyn has this, like, mystique. So when we were fortunate enough and, you know, lucky and blessed to win the first Derby, they'd say, born in Brooklyn. And then all these Queens guys would want to attack me. Say, you're not from Brooklyn. You're from Queens. You know? So the New York thing is something, you know, about that. But that's how we did. You're right. You know, this is how we got on the track, you know, just for the love of the horses, and got a job as a hot walk, and, you know, the rest is kind of history, you know?
Yeah, when you first started going to the races with your dad at Aqueduct, if I'm not mistaken, you couldn't even get onto the grounds, right, because of the rules of racing at that time.
Yeah, and the security guards had to watch me. He was friendly with the security guards. So, like, there were Pinkertons at the time. One guy was a great guy. His name was Tommy Ryan. I remember him since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And he was a Pinkerton for a long, long time. May he rest in peace. He used to watch him. He said, okay, sit over there to your dad's, you know, down to race. Then, when I got to be like 11 or 12, I jumped the fence to be in the races. Oh, this was great. And I used to run. I was, you know, like all of us, we were fast. And I remember this security guard picking and running after me. That was the fun. I was up second floor, third floor, down as I couldn't get in the clubhouse. Downstairs.
Didn't have a tie on.
I didn't have a tie. That's right, in those days. In those days, you had to have a jacket. That's right. Judah's right. You had a jacket and a tie. And it was $5 to get in a clubhouse, and that's when you made some money. And then, like, you know, all the knockaround guys that they would say in the neighborhood, they would go to the clubhouse, you know, because they would dress up nice and stuff, you know, $5. But no, it was a great. I tell you, you know, I'm very fortunate, very blessed. And the one thing that I always say, and funny, you know, you mentioned the Hall of Fame. Time goes by, 2005. I remember in a speech, guys, that when you know, you have a speech and you prepare your speech, but there was one thing that I wanted to get across. You know how baseball players or football players or basketball players say, you know, if it wasn't for baseball or football or basketball, I don't know where I'd be. Well, I said, if it wasn't for racing, I don't know where I'd be. So racing, I'm sure, has taken guys on a, you know, guys and girls on a good path, because you can get messed up, you know what I mean? So I'm proud of that, and, you know, I wish that could be another thing to be addressed and to be, like, maybe promoted, that, you know what, for kids, you know, and people, racing can help them.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. You know, I go back, the first book report I did was on a book called Making Money at the Races, and the nun called my mom and had a fit. You know,
sure,
I was in third grade, you know, but I knew about fractions. And so when we were studying fractions, she said, "What, you know, how do you know so much about fractions?" And I put the track on the board and I put in all the poles and I said, you know, this is a 16th of a mile from the finish, this is an 8th of a mile.
Wow.
And so she began to see the beauty of horse racing as an educational tool.
Oh, great.
But the other thing is, sure, and I know this is something that you've participated in your whole life as a trainer, is helping people on the backside.
Yeah, and we've met some really wonderful people on a racetrack, and you could see they've come back, like dude just pointed out, a lot of times they're in trouble and they come back, you know. And we had one of our grooms, he's been with me, oh, I can't count, maybe 16 years, and he just came out back out of the program. He's one of my best grooms.
Yeah.
And one of the things is that, you know, life is strange. Life is tough, no matter how you look at it. You know, and you brought out a good point. You said a magical word. You said God. And I think a lot of people on the racetrack need to use that more, use that word, because that's where it, that's what it's about. And that's, look, this, nobody made this.
You know,
God made this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny, you know, because my friends at Keeneland, and we know one of the reasons I got to the Hall of Fame was the people in Kentucky. It was half here, obviously, and half there. And, you know, I got such a, I don't know, I was very outspoken with the Poly Tribe. And one of the things I did say, Jude, you'd appreciate this, it was because, and I know what they were trying to do, you know, safety and this and that. Or the, but you look, God made dirt and God made grass. He didn't make something from your attic. And this is what I said. And of course, you know, I used to be a fair-haired boy down there. Didn't work for a while. But believe it or not, I'm getting back in your good graces.
You know, Nick, the other thing that you mentioned in your Hall of Fame induction speech was you said that you can't get into the Hall of Fame by yourself. There's no way. And I know that there have been an awful lot of people that have helped Nick Zito along the way, going back to your very first job as a hot walker. Talk about some of those people, even in the early days, that maybe helped you, it gave you your chance to, to be where you are now.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there was a gentleman, believe it or not, he was in our neighborhood. And he had one horse. That was Frank Stallone. He always kept one or two horses. He worked for a guy named Sal Rutschick, who won the Kentucky Derby with a horse named, I think, Count Turf. You got to go way back. So I used to hang out with him for a little while, but it wasn't a job. But anyway, in his barn, where he was, there was a leading trainer called Buddy Jacobson. And I actually got my first hop walking job for Buddy. Bobby came 2 years later. Believe it or not.
Wow.
And make a long story short, I started walking, and that was for everybody, I'm sorry, with the late, great Bobby Frankel. And I started walking horse for Buddy. And then in that barn was a gentleman from Virginia called Woods Garth. For some reason, he says, would you like to go to Kentucky? So I went home, it was like 17 or whatever it was, 18, and I told my family, my brothers, I said, I'm going to go to Kentucky. He said, okay, this and that. So I get on this van. He had a filly called Summer Scandal. Jude, if you go to the Keeneland Library, Mr. Greeley had the picture because one of my brothers had passed away, my other recently passed away. He had it in his treasure chest. I have a picture, skinny little kid from New York with black hair, walking hots, Summer Scandal wins the race. It's a prep for the spinster at the time. In the race was a filly called Open Fire. I'll tell you about that in a minute. Summer Scandal wins. The jockey is Walter Blum, famous steward.
Yeah.
He's the jockey. I'm in the winner's circle. Anyway, so when I go to the Keeneland, it's an amazing experience. I go to the library, if you could believe it. There's a Keeneland Library, which is still there. And the nostalgia, I was overwhelmed coming from New York. There wasn't anything there, Mike. You know where Calumet is?
Yeah.
That road, you could ask the fellas, you know, I'm going way back. Wasn't nothing. There was a post office or this or that. Wasn't anything. You know, Starbucks for sure. You know? And I had this great experience, you know. And we ran back into Spinster, and Open Fire beat us. We didn't make the lead or whatever. But here's a good one for you. They're off. You don't hear they're off. There was no announcer then. There was no, you know, live call.
Right.
Keeneland,
yeah,
you know
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah.
So that was amazing. We got on the van, looked around, this and that as well. Anyway, so I went back. They were going to Middleburg, Virginia. And when I went there, learned a little bit about horses then, you know. So when I went over there, I knew it wasn't for me. I had to get back. So Mr. Garth gave me $20. He's a gentleman. This was way back in the late 60s, I guess. And he said, bus will be here. It's a Greyhound bus in Middleburg, Virginia. And I said, oh, thanks, Mr. Garth. Do you know what time it will be? He said, yeah, about 3 o'clock. It was 12 o'clock then.
Wow.
But there was one bus, one day. Mm-hmm. And it went, so it got me back to New York. Got me back to New York. And I didn't know what I was going to do and what my life is. And then 6 months, like you say, you know, you're hanging around. Who knows what you're going to do, you know, get messed up or this. So finally, I went back to the track, got a job with Bob Lake. Bob was a California guy.
Yeah, and he used to train for Vanderbilt, right?
That's right. Yeah. And he came in and, boy, put me to work. I rubbed like 5 horses, whatever it is, stalls. I was catching stalls. Wasn't that good of a groom then. And then, you know, I learned a lot from Bob, a few things, whatever. And then I actually got a big break because I worked for Johnny Campbell. And at the time, he was a tremendous trainer. And I started rubbing horses. He gave me 4 horses to rub. We were in Maryland in those days for the winter. I was on a place. It was a place they used to call Bowie Racetrack, as you know.
Sure.
And we were on what they call Blueberry Hill. And I was in a room, whatever. It was a mess. And John walked in. He goes, "Oh, God, I can afford this. We're living on a mattress, this and that, you know, better." But it was a great experience. That the 4 horses I had, Jude, you'd appreciate. One had paint. One had poultice. They go into, and I remember the horses like they were yesterday. And they all had different ailments. And one horse, oh my God, his name was Airmaster. He was by Globemaster. And he was wild. Those days they didn't cut horses, you know, like they do.
Yeah.
And only the big outfits cut them, you know, like the Melons and Green Tree and, you know, those kind of people cut those horses. And he'd climb over the web and get me and this and that. But I learned a lot, you know, from John. And learned a lot of things not to do too, believe it or not. You know, you learn things from trainers, good things and bad things, you know, from everybody, you know. But that was a very big experience. I remember this, and I had an itch to go on my own. So I said, "John, I really want to go on my own, and the only way I could do that is," and I was an assistant, but without the license. And he thought I needed more time, and he was right, but I just had it in, you know, I wanted to be a trainer. I knew what I wanted to do. He said, "I'll tell you what, I'm going to get you a license. This is PJ's dad."
Yeah.
"And you could wipe you know what with it." That was yesterday. I remember that. And you know what? For a couple of years, he was right. So.
Yeah, people don't realize that, that you started a claiming stable, in the early 1970s, right?
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you how it started. And this is something. I don't know if they had this, Jude, in California, but this is amazing what I'm about to tell you. Because I hope that these younger trainers are grateful to what I'm about to say. So, and they're all terrific trainers, and they're all going into the Hall of Fame. But when we started, I had 1 horse. Then I had 2 horses. Then, during the winter, I would go visit my tack because I would turn the horses out. Right?
Yeah.
Then I would come back, and whoever the racing secretary was at the time, Tommy Trotter was my first one, I think, and Pat O'Brien was in charge of stalls. Of course, the great Kenny No. And he gave me, let's say, 5 stalls. That was a big break for Nick Zito. 5! And I'm going a little too fast because when we started, we would race, if they raced at Aqueduct, they would put you in the receiving barn at Belmont. If they raced at Belmont, they would put you at the receiving barn at Aqueduct.
Sure.
In other words, you were, no offense, second-class citizens.
Yep.
You got to move on. You got to move up as you paid your dues. So then I went from like 5 horses. I got a big break. Alan Rossoff was a big owner at the time. He was a breeder, and he gave me a bunch of horses. So I went from like 5 to 12 to 24 stalls. And what I'm trying to say is, a young guy today, he comes in, he gets like 20 stalls like that. 1 year, 2 years, they get 20 stalls, 25 stalls. It took me like, I don't know, you look it up. I don't have a memory for that. But I do know that after that, things started to get tough, but I kept hanging in there. That was a big break with Alan. And my big break, I think, was when I worked for a woman called Sandra Payson. I'll tell you why. As you know, Drew, you come from New York, you come from California. Her mother was Joan Whitney Payson. Her uncle, her father was Charlie Payson, but her mom was Joan Whitney Payson. They owned the New York Mets, and they owned what's just Green Tree. Her uncle was Uncle Jock Whitney. If you look at Keeneland, I won a race. I won a race in New York called Uncle Jock, but there was another horse that taught Sandra how to ride. His name was Major Louis Beard, the Beard course. So I took this horse to Keeneland, and he won the race.
Wow.
That day cool. Rode him, he won the race. And that was interesting. So I think Sandra, because after that was my first grade one winner, Ride Sally. In between, there was a horse I ran for Mike Spillman and the late Richie Bomsey called Morning Barb that they bought off Woody Stevens, and that was a big break for me. He was third in the Belmont. And, I can't imagine. I'm thinking all the seconds I had in the Belmonts and the thirds, too. You know, I've been blessed besides the winners. I had a lot of, but those opportunities, that made it easier for me to start moving up. And then as the years went on, I knew Rodney and Dale Jenkins, the jumping riders. They used to send me a horse or two, believe it or not, their horses. And I was in the claimer ranks, as you guys say. So through them, I met the Brophys, Giles Brophy. And he gave me a big opportunity. And he said, I hope you're good in the sales. I hope you're good at what you do. And I said, I hope so, too. And I always thought I could, you know, rubbing horses and whatever. And that was a very, very big break, because when I went to the sales, and believe me, dude, when I go to the sales, especially Keeneland, you know, you look at all these horses, you could see what Michelangelo went through, because you don't want to make a mistake. It's very hard. But I did come up with a horse called 36 Red, and that got me going, if you know what I mean.
Is that the horse that put you on the map?
I would say, for one reason, he got me into the Kentucky Derby. It was my mom's favorite horse, too. He won the Gotham and the Wood Memorial. Also put a jockey by the name of Mike Smith on the map. That was Mike Smith's two biggest wins, the Gotham and the Wood Memorial. That got him going. And obviously, we all like Mike, obviously.
Yeah.
So doing that, you know, the Derby obviously gets you national attention. And that opened up more doors. And then the very next year, may rest in peace, as you used to call him, Strikey, winning the Bluegrass and then winning the Kentucky Derby, we started to get going.
What is the story of Strike the Gold? Tell us that story.
Well, there's a lot to say. I mean, when you say the story from the beginning, or
well, you know, we're limited on time, but
yeah, right.
hit the highlights.
Oh, okay.
Hit the highlights. I mean, I know how much that meant to you going to the Kentucky Derby,
yeah,
with him,
well,
winning the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
Take us through that aspect
question.
Of it. Yeah.
No question. Yeah, you're right. I'm talking like it's my show.
No, it is your show. And this is great. We're having a blast.
Yeah,
so
by the way,
just keep going.
Visiting with Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. And yeah, Strike the Gold, obviously your very first horse going to the Kentucky Derby. They're just a tremendous run. I'll tell you what, why don't we take a quick break?
Sure.
We'll come back, we'll hear that story, and we'll take you through some of the highlights of a stellar Hall of Fame career with trainer Nick Zito. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
EPO Equine, the all-natural, healthy, safe, and legal blood builder, would like to extend a special congratulations to Nick and Martha Gonzalez and the entire team of this year's Queen's Plate winner, Midnight Aria, as well as Tony Alanya and all the connections of the remarkable Captain Treacherous, winner of the Metro and Meadowlands Pace. To learn more about how EPO Equine can help your equine athlete reach its true potential, contact Joe Valente at 215-501-6880 or visit epoequine.com.
Stallwatch is a leader in portable, affordable video surveillance for the equine industry. We provide a customer-focused service to help your racehorses in permanent and temporary locations stay safe, secure, and healthy. You've made the investment in your horse's training, care, and feeding. Now you can have the easy-to-install barn camera system to monitor your investment from any smartphone or computer.
2013 Kentucky Derby winning trainer Shug McGahee said, "I'm a fan of Stallwatch. We are able to monitor our barns from anywhere."
To find out more about the Stallwatch portable surveillance system, go to stallwatch.com.
I'm here with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, how do Flair strips, when applied to a horse's nose, help protect their lungs?
Mike, studies show that 90% of the resistance to airflow in exercising horses is in the upper airway, with the majority of that being in the nose. When exercising at high intensity, many horses can bleed into their lungs. The strips have been shown to reduce that bleeding by reducing the resistance to airflow through the nasal passages. This keeps horses healthy by keeping their lungs healthier during performance and training.
To learn more, visit flairstrips.com.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live, presented by Fasig Tipton.
And welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, we are live from Saratoga with our special guest here tonight. It is Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito. And if you did miss any portion of the first half of this program, do yourself a favor, go back to our website later on and download the podcast and listen at your leisure. You will not be disappointed. Spectacular stories in the first half, and really looking forward to what's coming up in the second half of the show. You can check out all of those shows and all the podcasts at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Nikki, when we went to the break, I mentioned Strike the Gold, and I know a horse very special to you for a lot of reasons, but you know, certainly that Kentucky Derby, something you're never going to forget, and it left a mark on racing, kind of on a kind of the bigger picture.
Well, I think one of the things too was he was a big 2-year-old. He was sent to me. Actually, J.T. Lundy with Calumet had sent him to me, and he had sent me another horse, two horses, and they were having difficulties, whatever. And I had these owners, Mr. Brophy, and he had two friends of his called Mr. Condren and Mr. Kanacha. So I used to watch him work, and it was something about the horse. And, dude, he didn't break 50. He didn't break 51. Chris Antley worked him for me once, too. And he says, he's going to be a nice horse, going to be a nice horse. And I felt the same way. So anyway, right up here, and I said to JT, I'll tell you how, I don't think you should sell this. He said, what do you mean? I said, I just worked him in front of the owners that I'm trying to sell him to. But I want to tell you this. He just beat a horse called Iroquois Drive, which is a solid $50,000 old horse, you know, older horse, went for 35 minutes. And the way he did it, he come from nowhere in the mud at Saratoga. I had this 18-year-old young rider called Johnny Velasquez work him. And Johnny worked him for me.
Wow.
Yeah, he worked Strike the Gold. And he just, right in front of what we're, you know, what we're talking about now, right in this track, come from nowhere and beat this horse. I said, well, nah, he's a good horse. He said, nah, I'm going to sell him anyway. So I told those gentlemen, they put some fillies together, like Daughters of Devonadale or whatever it was, together. So they bought the package. So now, still, he was that kind of horse. You know, robust horse, smallish, but you knew he was going to come around. There was just so much faith in the horse. We just knew there was something there. I don't know, it's spiritual, like you would say, you know, it was a blessing from God. So anyway, first time he runs Belmont, he gets beat 21 lengths, 21 lengths. So Mr. Conjures look, I said, well, I know he's better than that. He beat this horse in the morning, he worked faster. So that was a short race. Second time I ran him, he got beat 10 lengths. Third time I ran him, and Mike Smith again, broke his maiden, ironically, the same day his father died. Same day Ali Dodd died. Look it up. And he won by 10 lengths. And we knew he was going to be a good horse. So I took him on to Florida. And it was kind of a weird situation because he was a maiden. And years ago, you know, now they run maidens and stakes, they this and that. So I couldn't find, like, an allowance race for him. So I ran him 7/8. And by the way, the interesting thing, he had 9 different jockeys on before you know, Chris rode him for the Derby. So I took him there. I found a 7/8 of a mile race. Bailey rode him. You know, he came down the lane. He ran good. So I thought, this is great. So it's a one other then. And I can't Chris has got to ride some horse, or I don't know. It's a weird situation. It's usually, you know, jockeys.
Yeah.
It's usually, you know,
take off the morning of the draw.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Exactly. So I think, well, this one other end should be fine, you know, this and that. So in that race, you ran a good race, I believe, and you finished second to a horse called Cahill Road, who wind up, this is Unbridled's full brother, I think, wind up winning the Wood Memorial the same year. So we went, we were going to go to the Bluegrass. I'm sorry, I'm going too fast. Fly So Free is running now. He's the champion.
Yep.
And he's running, he's running in the Florida Derby. So Strikey's one other than, but he could run a distance of ground. He made this tremendous race, top horses in Florida, just like today. And I run him in the Florida Derby, makes this great move, finishes second. Fly So Free. So I come back to the barn and I'm kind of mad. You know, everybody's looking at me like I'm crazy. And this is a good story, too. With the owner of Fly So Free. Nice lady. Mrs. Volando. But I'll tell you the story. But so now, I said, I know I could beat this son of a bitch. Something like that, you know. Yeah. So they hear that on the radio. Scotty is such a gentleman, you know. So anyway, we go to Keeneland, and I work him with this filly called Farthest Point. If you could believe it, the workout is 57 and change. Now he's don't forget, he's coming from nowhere. So they get her in like 59, and they get her 57. I said, what? I said, holy shit, he likes this track, you know? And I went on a van with him in 36 Red. In the van, my groom, John, this fellow from Boston, your area, was so upset, you know, and I said, oh, God, and it looks like 36 was getting a little colicky. So we got to stop off in Georgia. I called Dr. Cheney, the great Dr. Cheney there, and he's got a friend of his, and this fellow comes, it's like in the movies, he comes in a truck stop. You know, we take the horse off, we treat him. So now we're on the, from Georgia, we get to Lexington, and it's snowing.
Wow.
And these horses come off the van, and they're kicking and bucking and this and that. So everything is great, you know. So we worked the two horses. And that's another good story with 36. I'll tell you that story at Keeneland. So we worked the two of them. They both worked fabulous. That's all. We're going to have a really good Keeneland here, you know. So I run 36 Red in his race, and I'll get back to Strikey after the part. We run 36 in his race. He wins. They take him down. They put my good friend Rusty Arnold up. Yep. He said, let me take this New York guy down. Right? And the stewards, I'm telling you, a bad call. Terrible call. 36 Red wins this feature allowance race, and they take him down.
That was the early day of Rusty's streak, right?
Yeah. That's right. So, but it was Battle Creek something. You ask Rusty, he'll know. So they take him down, and now we're getting ready to run in the Bluegrass Saturday. So talking to Chris about it, he was on him with the work, and he had, just like his father, had trouble changing leads, you know, just like Alidar did. Anyway, he's laying, we're watching him, and he's only like 12 lengths behind, you know, only like 10. And he makes this move, he goes right by Fly So Free. So then he wins the Bluegrass, and now we're on to the Derby, and of course, you know, Mr. Schuhoffer, you know, he's a class guy. He said, well, I think I trained him a little. I didn't train him as good as I should have, meaning Fly So Free. So, you know, we were just as humble as we're supposed to be, and obviously before honor's humility, and I certainly didn't want to do anything to screw up the horse and open my big mouth to something. Because, you know, you're a younger guy, you say more things than you do now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, he makes this amazing move, wins the Kentucky Derby, and it was a really special time, you know, from us.
And then along comes Go for Gin.
Yeah. But I want to tell you, but Strikey, the following year, he was 0 for 13. Guess who he beat in the Pimlico Special? Fly So Free. That's what I mean. You know, three
you
times.
Knew you could beat him.
Yeah, three times.
Talk about a thorn in your side,
yeah.
Huh?
But, I mean, you know, he was a great champion.
Yeah.
Fly So Free.
Yeah.
But that's how good Strike the Goal really was, you know. And I'm sorry, but
Yeah, Gopher Jen, who by the way broke my heart in the 1994 Kentucky Derby. I was a huge Holy Bull fan, so you broke my heart, Nick.
Well, I think that everything worked out that day. As Jude could tell you, as a horse trainer, things have to work so perfect. Again, we keep saying great, but people I'm mentioning, Chris McCarron, you know, all the people we've mentioned are great, and in our lives, they come into our lives and done what they've done, you know, for us. And Chris came in to work, go for Jan, and he said, wow. And he told his family, you better come in. I think I'm going to, I got a big shot. And what happened was it rained, and he loved the slop. And, you know, Holy Bull, who was the horse of the year, wound up, he's an amazing horse, didn't fire. And then we came back and the Preakness ran second, and second in the Belmont to Tabasco Cat. So he proved what a great horse he was at the time, Go for Jen. And that was a big, big thing, too. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, is emotionally, for me, it got out with me with Strike the Gold, and then with Go for Jen, it really got out of me. I think if I'm ever fortunate, I promise the world, maybe God's saying, you know, you can't act that way or something. Yeah. You know, you can be joyous, but it was over the top because I was very... And, you know, one of the things, I met Al Michaels, you know, from California. He said to me, he was great. He said, when you see Nick Zito, it's like etched in stone, his face, that he wanted to win the Kentucky Derby. And he was right, because if you go around for 25 years wanting to do something and then you accomplishment, it's going to come out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can get on you for being happy that you won the Derby.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's been, of course, nearly 20 years since Go for Jen. I know you have this love affair with the Kentucky Derby, and rightfully so. Do you want to win it maybe even a little bit more now that it's been so long since you've been...
You know, guys, I tell you, I'm so happy you asked me that question. 2010, you know, we're all... Horse trainers, I guess, are all sick somehow. I mean, they're sick mentally, physically, emotionally. You know, if you check all three, you know. Yeah. You got something, and in 2010, I was really going through a hard time, you know, emotionally, because you get this reputation, Wayne Lucas, Bob Baffert, Nick Zito, you know, so you say, gee, you got to win this thing again, you got to win this thing again, you got to win this thing, and more so to try to get the peace, not the glory, the peace. And when Icebox, you know, was making that move, and I had Jackson in there too, felt so confident that day, and he fell short. He finished second to Super Saver. That was Todd Pletcher's first Derby, and, you know, rightfully so. He deservingly had to win one, you know. And, of course, I'm sure he's going to win many more, you know. But it took a lot out of me that year. And I think now, you know, Mike, Jude, if I don't win one, I got peace with myself. I would have loved to have won the third one. Pat Riley, when he won his championship, you know, with the Heat, he said the same thing. He said it was just peace. And I know what he meant. But now, you know, but I have to, I'd like to get back. I'd like to get back to the Derby. And I promise you, as long as they have HR, you know, I mean.
Horse Racing Network. RN.
I won't forget it. I'll be back. And that's what I want to do. And win, fine. But just to be back there again, I'm definitely going to do that. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to win a third Derby, but I promise you I'll make sure I'm back there again. I think with the owners I have now and the blessings I have and the people that, you know, I'm at kind of at peace. You know, sometimes, believe it or not, you do a lot of things and you maybe go too fast or too slow or have too much or would have too less. You know, it catches up to you, you know. You got to have a good niche. It's like, you know, it's funny. Mike Dickey, he said something, and it's funny we're talking about sports, but we're in racing, and racing is sports. When he worked for Tom Landry, and Mike Dickey is a great guy, you know, a great person, and Tom Landry is no better coach. I think Parcells even gave him credit, whatever. And the great Tom Landry said to Mike Dickey, Mike, you'll always be a Chicago Bear. So there's something with relationships, something where you come from, something who you work for, something who you have horses for, who you train for. And I think for sure I'll get back. So it's just myself that I have to realize I've been very lucky. I've trained for a lot of great owners, owners that are with me now, owners that were with me before. You can never say anything bad to someone makes you make an opportunity. It makes you make a living. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you have this, you know, disagreements or not. But I'll definitely get back there again. And, you know, if we win one, fine. But I think the most important thing, guys, is for me, is to try to get back there. Look, we're getting older, but we're not ancient. You know? And you look at some of the great horse trainers in time, whether it's Charlie Whittingham or the great Woody Stevens or the great Alan Jurgens or whoever I'm looking, you know, leaving out, or Mac Miller or somebody. Hey, they went pretty far, you know, and they proved, you know, that you could train horses, you know, as you keep getting older. And I feel like I'm actually having, like, these last year and a half, Jude, I'm starting to feel like I'm getting back in the groove, you know?
Well, your stable's definitely on the upswing. You got a bunch of nice two-year-olds, and hopefully those will continue to develop and turn into good three-year-olds. And I think, you know... You know the old saying, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken, you know what. And sure. And that's so true. And I remember one time when I was going through a slump, the great Gary Jones, who probably should be in the Hall of Fame, you know, he told me, it's not you. You know, Gary and I were having a conversation on the apron at San Ed, it's not you. He says, I see those horses you run. They're absolute bumps, you know. Get rid of them. You start from scratch if you have to. But, you know, it's not what you're doing. It's just the horses aren't that good. And everybody goes through that. I mean, I remember one time Charlie Whittingham was like 0 for 52 or something. And they had him wrapped up in a coffin and buried. And then, he, you know, he comes out and wins the Kentucky Derby with Ferdinand, you know, at whatever age he was, 80 years old or whatever. So, I mean, it's all that stuff is just baloney. And it just happens. Sometimes, you know, your horses aren't that good. So now you've got a great situation. Where the two-year-old you ran yesterday, I mean, he could be another strike to gold or whatever, you know.
Right.
And you just have to keep playing the game. As long as you're playing, you're in it.
Talking with Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasit Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nick, you started the interview tonight talking about being a fan of horse racing first and foremost. So I know, more than likely, like most of us, you would love to see another Triple Crown winner in the sport. Both of your Belmont victories, you've played the spoiler with a Triple Crown year. Of course, Birdstone first and then DeTerra second. Obviously, you were thrilled to win the Belmont Stakes. Is there part of you, though, that was kind of bittersweet denying that Triple Crown?
Well, I think the first one, but, you know, you take a deep breath. And the reason I say that is, you know, look, you're not supposed to have a, like they say, a rooting section, you know, for certain people, this and that. But how could you not have rooting for the Chapmans and John Service? How could you not have root for those people? Mm-hmm. So, not saying that if you beat somebody, this, but I'm just saying they were special people. They really were. You know, Mrs. Chapman's a sweetheart, and John he's a sweetheart. You know, John Service, classy guy, and good horse trainer, whatever. But then when I took a deep breath and all those seconds I had in the Belmont, you know what I mean? I said, you know what? God was waiting for this. And, you know, he was waiting for me because, as they say in a good book, you know, leave it to God and he'll get you through everything. And sometimes, you know, before honors humility and all those seconds and all those tough beats. Strikey got beat a nose and Go for Jim was second and this one was second and that one was second. You know, and this one was third and this one was blocked and this one was the... And then I got a chance to make history. And when I say that, think about this. Talk about a blessed guy, right? Okay. 120,000 people there. 33 million people, I think, watching. We were part of history, you know? And Mary Lou and John Henriksen, you know, her husband, my good friend, what could I say about her? You know, gratitude is her middle name. She is so gracious and... was almost apologizing, you know?
Yeah.
And when you know, when they spoke to us, we kind of, you know, Bob Costas said whatever he said to me, and I said, I think the right things, but you have to move on and do your job. And I think the next one, Mike, when we beat DeTerra beat
Big Brown,
I think that was like, well, that horse just didn't fire. We were on the lead. That's happened a lot of times. Lucas did it with Commendable. You go way back before you guys were born. Sherlock paid 100 and whatever he paid.
Yeah.
And then all these long shots that do win. Even though Birdstone paid a big price, he won the Champagne as a two-year-old. You know what I mean? And he was a a top horse, later winning the Belmont and later winning the Travers, which is a pretty good thing to do in New York. Champagne, the Belmont, the Travers, that's pretty good.
Yeah. He had trained so well up to the Belmont as well, and it wasn't surprising. I'll never forget that race as long as I live. There were so many things to remember about it, but I was standing there with the woman who would become my wife and Erin Wellman, who's now the president of Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, and we were all we were actually in one owner's box. They couldn't get back to the box because there were so many people. I don't know where they watched the race from,
right.
But we were in one of the owner's boxes watching the race, and Erin said to me, "Who's that moving on the turn?" And I said, "It's Mrs. Whitney's horse," because I had my binoculars and I could see that, you know, horses look like ants at Belmont Park.
That's right.
I could see the
colors.
Eaten blue and brown, you know,
yeah.
And I mean, I just saw him moving, and I just knew at that point, probably midpoint on the turn, that you were going to win the race. I mean, there was just no way they were going to stop him, you know, and it was amazing. And then how silent the crowd got afterwards.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
it was like a library in Belmont.
That's
Park.
A very good point. I'll tell you why. There were so many people from the Philadelphia area coming down rooting for Smarty Jones and young kids and teenage kids and everybody, you know. And I think maybe because I was a New York guy, a New York trainer, you know, and the Whitneys and whatever, that it wasn't as bad as it would have been if somebody else beat them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So we're very proud of that. Peb did a cartoon of us, and it said Wanted, and he had a picture of me and whatever. And Philadelphia newspaper, like, you know?
Yeah.
That was kind of funny. That was funny.
Well, Mrs. Whitney, you brought her up. I mean, how gracious a lady.
Oh,
you know,
God.
She was here over the weekend for the Whitney Stakes. And talk about your relationship with her and what she means to the game.
Oh, my God. Thank you for bringing that up, dude. What could you say? I mean, the best way I could put it and just sum it up real quick is this. You know how every year... I've been saying this. This is the third time I said this publicly. Every year, you got to elect the president 4 years. And it would be fitting if every year we elected an American queen for us to be an advisor for the president. She would easily win. And maybe next year, 4 years, be Susan Lucci.
Her sidekick.
Yeah, sidekick. But the good thing is she brings so much to the table of everything you want. She is a servant. I mean, she is a public servant. She serves. You know, she may be a Whitney and she may be Mary Lou Whitney, but she serves the people and the people love her. She does things that, you know, I love this phrase in the good book about a widow. And Jesus talks about, you know, how people have so much money, so they give so much. And he says, tells his, you know, apostles that, look how much money they gave, but they have that. But look at this poor widow, came and gave 2 pence, that's all she had. Well, Mary Lou has wealth, but she gives everything she has.
Yeah.
She's at the backstretch feeding those people. She's hospitals. She donates to this. She gives. She is a wonderful, wonderful lady, and I am so proud and so happy to have met someone like that in my life. And her wonderful husband, John Henriksen, who's become my good friend. And I can say that, because not everybody starts off as good friends. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
And we're like brothers. And I can tell you, you know, they're two of the best people you'll ever meet. And let me tell you something, too. Get this right in, you know, on my favorite radio show. When they had nobody up here, she brought the Today Show up here. Before Saratoga was just, you know, the Saratoga, and they did that. She was the one that said, no, we need to do more. And all those things that she had in the casino, you know, with the parades that she would have, and she'd have all those parties and, you know, all the celebrities there. And what would she do with that money? Give it to charity.
Yeah.
So she's a great lady, and thanks for asking.
And, of course, being a Hall of Fame trainer, you've had the privilege to train for some of the biggest names in the sporting world. Rick Pitino, the late George Steinbrenner, was a longtime client of yours. Talk about those relationships.
Well, one thing that I love, you know, I have a special heart for Mr. Steinbrenner. Everybody knows that. I was fortunate enough to see Jessica here last weekend, and her son Robert said, say hello to my mom's here. And her husband, Felix, is a wonderful guy. And I'm very close to the Steinbrenner family. Actually, Hank, we have a horse called Tiz Yankee for Hank. And George and meant so much to me. He was like, I can't explain it to you. Most people would never realize how close I was to George Steinbrenner, but I'll give you a real, example. In 1996, I sat in the box when the Yankees played the Mariners and Ken Griffey Jr. was there. I sat next to Joe DiMaggio.
Wow.
I was one of his, he said, one of the security guards said, would you want to be one of the bodyguards today? I said, what's that? He's got to walk out with Joe D. And Mike Wallace was in there, CBS. And Joe would put on his sunglasses. When we walked downstairs, it was like Elvis. Believe me, they all would attack him, whatever. And this kid came up in a wheelchair, and he goes, Joe, what do you think of Griffey? And he said, well, he makes contact. it was such an honor for me. And we spoke. And he said to me, it was funny. And actually, this is funny. He sent me a little note, if you can believe it. He said, Nick, what are you going to do about this Lucas guy? Really? And we wind up stopping his Triple Crown. Isn't that something?
That's great.
So Steinbrenner was great. And, of course, Rick and I, everybody knows, are good friends. And Joanne, his wife, and Kimmy, my wife, are best friends. And it's been a great run with everybody loved Rick. Rick Pitino is a great guy, a great coach, a great person. You know, what could you say? And I always keep a horse or two for Rick once in a while. And he told me, I'll go to Keeneland, pick him out a yearling, him and his friends or two. And we'll always have something. We got lucky together, We got lucky together. We win a Champagne, Bluegrass. It's pretty good races to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, went to the Derby a couple of times with Rick. Maybe we do it again. It'll be good. But he's good for racing, obviously.
Yeah, he's big for the game.
Yeah.
Nick, when everything's all said and done, what do you want Nick Zito's legacy to be?
Well, I think for one, which I think everybody wants, it's a hard thing to do. You'd like most of the people to like you, let's say, right? I was thinking of something like this the other day. I said, they tell me, Nick, 7 out of 10 guys like you. I said, wow, I could run for anything. I said, because when they say a guy's up in 52%, they go, whoa. So I said, that's pretty good, So maybe that would be the best thing for me. Just like most people like you, and not everybody can like. We all have faults. We all make mistakes. We all ask for forgiveness, and we hope, just to be a good guy and just to show people I didn't want to be a jerk around here, And that's the only thing. Just I think everybody wants the same thing. When they really – When they call on you, like you said, when the Lord calls you, hopefully not too soon. hopefully I got to do a few more of these shows, and then we'll go. Okay? Then we'll go.
Yeah, this is just Nick Zito the early years.
Right,
yeah.
There you go.
Well, let me tell you my Nick Zito story. Nick, my wife, Michelle, a huge Nick Zito fan. She has been since I first got her into racing in the late 1990s. And she's followed your horses for a long time and continues to do so. But before we moved from Massachusetts to Kentucky, we made a trip to kind of survey the land down there in Lexington, and we went to Keeneland, and our very first trip to Keeneland, and it was, as you said, a very special place. And you were there to run Shammy Davis, and I want to say it was the Lexington Stakes. I could be wrong, but I want to say it was the Lexington Stakes. And one of the security guards who was manning the paddock said, well, we told them we were huge Nick Zito fans, and they says, well, I'll tell you what, he's coming up with this horse for the big race. Come see me. I'll let you sneak into the paddock at Keeneland. We were just awestruck at that point. And he said, you can get a chance to meet Nick Zito. So we're a little bit nervous at that point. And here comes Nick Zito with the horse. And I stopped you. I introduced Michelle to you. And you stopped. You talked to us for a minute. You put your arm around her. You took a picture. The picture is still, we still have it.
We have it
house.
In the studio.
Yeah, we have it in the studio now.
Oh,
yeah, and, if you don't think Nick Zito is a top-class individual, that's what it's all about. I mean, a heart as big as gold, and a lot of people wouldn't do that, but you did.
Well, thank. Well, that's nice, and I appreciate that. Well, sometimes you learn this from. Tell you what, we all have great moms, and my mom, may she rest in peace. This is funny. Remember when you had the dosage? Remember that?
Yeah.
So everybody had this. you know, articulate philosophy on dosage. You know, Dr. Romans and did great things, this and that, but I think Strike, you'd be able to break. You didn't have the dosage. And then later on, they make you what they call it Chef de Race, which is like Bobby Flay now. You know? So, you know, they make you Chef de Race.
He's the king, right?
But the great part, I remember my mom, like it was yesterday, she said, look, you're either a good person or you're not. She was referring to Strike the Gold as a good person. And he won the Kentucky Derby, beat the dosage. So there's something, you know, to that, and I appreciate that. And we get that, hopefully, I get some of that from my mom, because that's what my mom was. She was the best.
Only about 5 minutes left here to wrap up this visit with Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito on Trainer Talk, presented by Fazay Tipton. Nick, you and your wife Kim for a long time have been big champions and proponents of racehorse retirement and racehorse aftercare, something you're still very much involved with.
Yeah, I was talking to a bunch of people again about it, and it's hard because, you know, they say you can't save the world. But I think with the great John Hettinger, my mentor, and of course Kimmy, my wife, who we all love and we know what she does for us, she's amazing. If you look at that plaque now that Fazay Tipton put up in his honor, in the when the horses walk in now, it says it the best, you know, from to my four-legged friends. And that's what they are to us. They're friends to us, and they need help, you know, friend indeed, like they say, and they need help. And I just think the main thing is that if it could be explained more so to them. See, they're not opposed as euthanizing one. It's just opposed. And I'll say that, you know, on the air. It's opposed as taking them to slaughter, you know. And again, it says, you know, hold back those, in the good book, to hold back those submitted to slaughter, you know, that succumb to slaughter. You're not supposed to do that. You're just not. And again, you know, over and over and over again, yes, the Pony Express, yes, the horse, thousands of years of horses, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So there's got to be a better way. But slaughter is out of the question. So, yes, could you save the world? No. But on the other hand, let's try to have a happy medium. And, you know, they work tirelessly. All I do is try to tell people, like I'm doing on your on the great H. You know,
you get it right.
We're talking about great.
You give about 2 minutes left to get that right.
We're talking about great. But the thing is, you know, on your radio show, if I could just say that, they do the work. I mean, I like to, hopefully my name means something, you know, to have the cause. You know, you preach the gospel for that. It's a good cause. It's the best, you know, in our business. That's all we can do. And sure, if they want mom and papa out there now, and you know how mom and papa, well, I'm going to give $10, which they don't have. I'm going to give $100 what they don't have. They should make sure that those organizations, right? Just like those kids in Africa, when you send money over there, make sure it goes to the kids.
Right.
Make sure it goes to the horses. You have an obligation to that too. You could open your mouth. You could say, where's my $20 going? Where's my $100 going? But at least send it. And then ask the question, where's it going? And we got some wonderful people, honest and courageous, that are doing that thing. My wife's one of them, and they want to get in touch with her. She'll tell you where to send the horses, and she'll tell you what to do.
He's Hall of Fame trainer Nick Zito. It's been an amazing visit here over the past hour or so on Trainer Talk, presented by Fazay Tipton. And Nick, we can't thank you enough for taking the time to visit with us. We've been wanting to do this with you for a long time, and really happy to have you on board. Of course, Nick, like all of our guests who appear on the program, going to receive gifts from a couple of our sponsors, Flair Equine Nasal Strips, and our man Joey Diamond, a fellow Paisan with EPO Equine. So we'll take care of that, Nick.
I appreciate it. I appreciate what you guys do. I appreciate, you know, having an opportunity to tell the whole world about this fella here, Jude, because training horses is not easy, and he sacrificed a lot. Now he's bringing back this again to sacrifice this to tell everybody what's going on. And you're the best, my friend. You learned from the best, from Pete.
Yeah.
So I appreciate being on here. And once in a while I call in, I give your friend Chad a couple of
times. Yeah, give him a little hard time.
Yeah, once in a while. Thanks.
All right, Nicky, thanks
Thank
so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Don't forget that you can check out a podcast of this program. If you missed any portion of the show, it will be available on our website, horseracingradio.net. Also, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And go back and listen at your leisure. Of course, all this coverage presented by our friends at Fazay Tipton. And, boy, just an amazing organization there. What a great visit here tonight, JT.
Yeah, this is great. Like Charlie Rose would say, Nick Zito for the hour.
Yeah, very special hour. And that about do it for us here tonight. Don't forget, we are back to tomorrow and Friday, 3 to 7 Eastern Time, with our HRN Live coverage. Of course, this segment from 6 to 7 on Thursday night will be our BristNet.com call-in show, your chance to call in and talk racing with all of our experts here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And on Friday, the Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview. And this weekend, of course, we'll be back with our Equine Forum show on Saturday morning from 8 to 10. See that entire schedule at horseracingradio.net. For our producer, Lee Delapina, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, I am Mike Pena. Our thanks to special guest Hall of Famer Nick Zito tonight. We will talk to you tomorrow here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Good night, Barbados.